Hello. Hello, everybody. Can you hear me? Hey, welcome, everybody, to The Third Opinion. This is a podcast about public health, well-being, media, and censorship. In this very special episode, we will be speaking with Efrat Fenningson, who is an Israeli journalist, podcaster, and activist. She has a history of being a marketing expert and former CMO. What's that? The
Chief Marketing Officer
of global companies, who turned into a journalist when the void left by the mainstream media and their lies became too big to bear. Mm-hmm. We can understand that feeling here at The Third Opinion Uncensored. Efrat strives to uncover the hidden truth from Israel and report it to the world and bring the world's hidden reality to uninformed Israelis and beyond. She writes for Bereshit, one of the only papers in Israel without censorship, and on her Substack that is called You're the Voice. Mm-hmm. She covers the state of affairs in Israel, the broader picture of global events, and our role as sovereign citizens. That's a radical thing to say these days, really.
Indeed.
I hope we don't get censored for that, with an important voice and unique role to play. You're the Voice is the name of her podcast, also on Twitter and Spotify. And welcome to Australia and welcome to the studio, Efrat.
Thank you for having me. It's so great to be here.
Great to have you here. And we have many questions. I don't know, we're meant to be here for an hour, but if the next show doesn't come, we'll just keep on going.
Yeah. Cool. They'll be here.
So let's just start in the past, mm-hmm. because the past was a long time ago. Where were you in life before COVID began?
I was in my very comfortable, cushy corporate position, working for different tech companies and startup companies in Israel and abroad. I had a very successful career, earning a lot of money, managing a lot of people, managing a lot of budgets, and basically helping other people make money. So in marketing, this is my specialty. I can really see how a company should operate in a global landscape and help that company create success. And so that's what I've been doing for about 20 years. I actually started my journey in Australia in 2001 when I came here to be a student at Monash University, and I studied computer science. I was a programmer for a few years, and that's how I got into tech. But I was sick of tech creation quite fast, and I wanted to create the stories and create the the behind the scenes of the technology rather than technology itself. So I started my own small business when I was here in Melbourne. I had two shops, and I started an online business back in 2005. It was eBay at the time, and I learned about e-commerce. It was a lot of fun. And I went back to Israel in 2007 after 6 years here in Australia, after already having my citizenship and feeling that this was my second home. Melbourne was my second home. But I went back to Israel because I wanted to start a family. And I had my son born in Israel. And after we got divorced, his dad and me, his dad came back to Melbourne, and I raised my son for another 14 years on my own. And today I'm kind of closing this circle because I'm back here again in Melbourne as my son is deciding to stay and live here with his father. So that's a very significant time, yes. Moment in time for me. It closes a lot of circles that have started back then, about 20 years ago. And I think I shouldn't be surprised that my son wants to live here. It's exactly what I did.
Sure.
You know what I mean? A few years after him, but still I did the same. And I want to stay in Israel. So it means that, I'm as a mother, I'm letting go of my son right now. He's 14 years old, and it's very difficult. But I guess this time, where we're living in 2021, 2, 3, 4, I think we're going to see it for another 1 or 2 years ahead, or maybe till the end of that decade, is going to be filled with changes. It's going to be filled with events that we have not anticipated and maybe that we don't want. And I think that our only hope to strive during this period is to adapt to these changes and accept them, radically accept them. Otherwise, it's going to be very difficult.
Well, you were just talking the numbers then, and I was thinking that in history, the 20s have been famous for the Great Depression. And, you know,
100 years ago. Yes.
And that was certainly a lot of change in society and the way people lived. Now we're 100 years later.
It's the same.
And the 20s has really been an interesting decade.
100%. And you know how you probably are familiar with the fourth turning and the monetary cycle. Every 20 years there is a change in terms of monetary and financial cycles. And we're at the end of an 80-year cycle right now, which means that a big monetary shift is going to happen around the world in the financial systems. It ties into a lot of history about money as well that people are, on the most part, are not familiar with after the Second World War and everything that's happened. So these historical cycles are happening, I think, energetically, spiritually, but also very in a very earthy way.
Well, a very practical thing that's happened is the BRICS communion have started. And then I was just reading that now between China and Russia, they will be transacting oil and stuff without U.S. dollars.
Correct. And that's called de-dollarization. They're moving away from the dollar, which is becoming weaker. Its position is becoming weaker around the world. It's related to the position of the U.S. as the world's hegemony, right? And all of a sudden, the position of the U.S. Is not as strong anymore, not as it has been, and the BRICS are gaining more and more power. We're seeing the BRICS countries.
So, maybe explain to the audience who the BRICS are.
The BRICS,
and
sure.
Union of countries.
Sure. So the BRICS are Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and they have been that group for a long time. But over the past few years, we see more and more countries applying to become part of that group, which is gaining momentum and gaining power. And they are taking certain actions to position themselves away from the U.S. and the petrodollar, the dollar that is being used in order to transact oil and gas deals around the world. That's that's the law, basically. That's the global law.
Well, whatever happened to the gold dollar?
So the gold dollar was disappeared, and the gold standard was fading out about 100 years ago, and then slowly countries have been adopting the dollar as the dominant currency. We're going back. It's interesting. 1944 or 5, Bretton Woods Agreement, right after the Second World War, all the countries around the world got together after the Second World War and said, okay, now the economy of the world is, pardon my French, effed up, and we need to fix it again. So let's all get together and decide who's going to be the leader now. And the U.S. said, we're going to be the leader because we have the biggest amount of gold and money, and we're the most powerful. And all you countries are going to be pegged to our currency. So your currency is going to be pegged to the dollar, and we're the only ones that are going to be pegged to gold. Okay? And until that moment, many, many countries were pegged to gold, but they stopped, and they were pegged to dollar from that point, 1944 or 5. And then, fast forward, 1971, President Nixon in the U.S. came out and said, well, sorry, everyone, I know we were pegged to gold until today, but there's not enough gold in reserves, and we need your gold, by the way. Bring
because
it back.
We've spent too much money.
We spent too much money on Vietnam
it's
War
cheap,
and
it's cheaper
on other
to
wars.
Print. It's cheaper
exactly,
to print.
Exactly. From now on, we're just going to print. So from now on, the dollar is not pegged to gold anymore. It's pegged to nothing, to air, to thin air. That's why your dollar, and people don't know it, is the same as toilet paper. It has no value except for the trust you give your government.
Well, during COVID, toilet paper was worth a lot. So I don't know if that's necessarily
during the
worst
the Holocaust
thing.
As well.
And we don't have paper money anymore. We don't even have plastic money anymore. It's just
digital. So it's not even that good.
That's where we're heading. We're heading towards a digital era, completely digital era.
And just the effort to just pay with money now in the supermarket, they've kind of knocked it down to just one machine or one person, and they make sure they have to wait a long time and the machine doesn't work, and just so much effort. It's extraordinary. And you talk to people in the supermarket and they seem to understand. Like you explain. I like to explain it to every single person I encounter in the supermarket when I pay.
That's important.
You know. And then they said, would you like to have your rewards scanned? I said, no, I don't want to be rewarded for shopping in a supermarket that doesn't take cash.
Yeah, I've been monitoring it since I came here, and I've been good paying mostly with cash, except for the places that wouldn't accept it, which is, I think, illegal. I don't know how it is here. In Israel, it's illegal to not accept
it's
your
illegal.
Legal tender.
Okay.
Yeah, to not accept cash, it's illegal. But you have to really
it's
be, you know, vigilant with a lot of energy to explain it to them.
There are plenty of places around in Melbourne that say we don't take cash.
I know. I've seen. It's very sad.
So given let's go back. So we're talking about this is just one aspect.
What happens to the city if there's a blackout?
But that's part of let's ask Efrat. Why would they do that? Because what happens to the city? Because we've already had lots of incidents happening where, you know,
have you
the
heard
systems
in
have
New Zealand? It happened last year in New Zealand. I think it was February when there was a blackout for a few days. And it wasn't a nice sight. There was looting and violence, and people started becoming desperate for food. It's a big mess when there is no electricity for a few days.
It doesn't have to. I mean, it could be the Wi-Fi. It could be the FPOS machine.
Correct.
It could be the bank computer.
Yeah, and that's why I owe. And it's coming, by the way. This will happen. If you haven't been following, then I suggest you do. Go to the WEF, the World Economic Forum website, and read about their predictions for a cyber attack, a big, big, big cyber attack. And I know here in Australia you had a couple, right, with Optus.
Optus was
and with Medibank.
Are we allowed to mention the World Economic Forum?
Are we not? Is there something that we should not mention?
Well, the list of not mentioned grows every day, so you never know.
Well, okay. I don't know where we are with our censorship rules. wasn't that meant to go through over Christmas? So I don't know. I'm not sure where
anyway,
we're standing at the moment.
You just blame me. I'm a foreigner.
Did the virus come out of the lab or not?
Tell them to come after me. Anyway,
we can't control individuals.
Me, right?
So you're just our guest on the show. So explain to me
so
why.
So if you want to explain who blew up Nord Stream 2, that would be a beauty.
Let's go back. Let's go back to.
I
just want to understand what you're saying, because you're saying that the World Economic Forum, weforum.org, we forum. There is a lot of information there, and you're saying on there's a warning, or that they're saying
there's a warning. There's a prediction. You know
prediction.
How they tell you about everything they're gonna do. They said about COVID.
Saw
Event 201. You've heard about that. That's 2019. A group of companies, corporations, and governmental bodies coming together to emulate what's going to happen if there's the end of the world pandemic. And they're looking at everything. What are the doctors going to do? The media going to do? They're forecasting what's going to happen. So the same way they've done it then, they are doing it again with the next attack that's going to happen.
That sounds like
a conspiracy theory. Oh, no.
And what's so freaky is that it's been going on for a decade. Like they say openly, proudly, this is what we want to do. And then it happens and people are so shocked.
Yes, that's right. And it's and I don't really care how people call me. They call me conspiracy theory, but if they go to my blog and to my articles in Bereshit, they see that everything that I've written has happened or is happening in the process of happening. So I don't really care. I care about preparing myself, my family, and my community for tough days ahead. You were talking about a blackout. I want to be prepared if something like that happens. If there is a cyber attack, and they are taking down all the credit card machines and the FPOS and the banks are not working and supermarkets can't operate because they only have one till with cash. What are we going to do, right?
So what should we do? I know that you, I saw that on your Twitter that you referred to a woman called Catherine Austin Fitz,
correct,
who is the publisher of the Solari Report.
That's right.
And she was a former Assistant Secretary of Housing in the Bush administration. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, she's warning people. And she used to control a multi-billion-dollar budget. So
she's a lady to follow. Yeah,
and she talks about that how they're implementing multiple legal and regulatory infrastructures under the auspices of many different organizations like WHO, WF, G20.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that, because when people listen to this, they think, oh, this is just not real. And then you have someone of that at that level,
correct,
who's a whistleblower.
That's
right.
And she came from the financial world, from Wall Street.
Yeah.
And if you want to go deeper on what she's saying, go watch a movie called Planet Lockdown.
Planet Lockdown.
Yeah. And there is a, I think, more than 1 hour interview with her where she's explaining very, very clearly how the powers that be, starting with the bankers of the world, the money people, who are, to her opinion, are the ones controlling the world, they are doing meticulous work in siloing life for us, creating different silos in different areas of life so that we don't see the connection between them. So there's the health silo, and everything that happens inside the big pharma health world is one silo, and it has nothing to do, so-called, with the money silo, right? And the bankers and the people that run our money and the cashless agenda and all these agendas, right? They're not connected to health at all. And then you have digitization and technology, big tech, and digitizing everything that we see in our lives, not related to health, not related to money, right? And she goes on and she explains how these things are all planned by the same people in the same big global organization, and they are working very hard to try and keep it detached. Until about now, 2020, 2021, where it's falling apart for them and they can't hide the connection between those silos anymore. It's all becoming very apparent that when a central banker, he's actually the head of the central bankers of the world, his name is, he's got an Argentinian name, Cristans. He's the head of the Bank of International Settlements, BIS. He sits there in 2020, I think it was July, don't catch me on the month, but in 2020, and he talks about digital passports and digital vaccine passports before the vaccines even came. It was a few months after COVID broke out. And he's saying how with COVID, with the vaccine passports, we'll be able to monitor better how people act and behave in their lives. And the money people of the world, like Catherine Austin Fitz, like Edward Dowd, are looking at this guy who's a central banker. What is your connection to health, right? And they're saying, okay, if this guy's now talking about vaccine passports and COVID-19, then they're behind it as well. They would never have, you know, come out and say it if that's not something down the pipeline that they're planning. So it's all related. At this point in time, when so much information is out there, all you have to do is choose to want to see it.
But that part, the choosing what you want to see, is really where most people are trapped, because they're looking within the trusted news initiative, the media censorship silo, which we happen to just be a little bit outside of because we can look into it. Mm-hmm. And if I mention that to people, they don't understand how much that has influenced everything they now believe. So, for example, today I was speaking to someone at this festival we were at, and he's a person that you would imagine would be on the side of, you know, freedom, and he's sort of a hippie-looking guy, and he's been involved with the festival culture for 40 years. And he told me how Dr. John Campbell, who is a well-known he started off as very conservative. He started off being a great believer in COVID and the vaccines and the lockdowns. Mm-hmm. And as time went on, and he has millions of people who trust him, he went from being a believer to becoming skeptical to now being pretty outraged. And he interviews people around the world. So this person said to me, he's a conspiracy theorist. He's not true. I've read all this stuff. I've got 8 different websites that all say that he's this and he can't be trusted. And he doesn't understand that the way that the media is being controlled at this time is that we will have literally hundreds of newspapers and websites all saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. Because they are under the auspices of whether it's the BBC, the ABC, the Trusted News. The Trusted News Initiative has got many different it has many different media outlets under it, from Reuters to Associated Press to
and
Al Jazeera
all
to
by the same people.
Google to Facebook to Instagram. Yes,
and they're all controlled by the same people. And go check out BlackRock and Vanguard. They all have
it's a lot of homework though to go and check it out. Do you know what I'm saying?
Just so watch a movie that does the work for you. They're out there.
So just you mentioned Planet Lockdown, right?
And
so
I'll mention another one, Monopoly.
Monopoly. I saw that a few years ago. But here on Wikipedia, Planet Lockdown, so you mentioned that, and this is how. So if you go to Wikipedia or if you go to your fact checkers,
they'll all say
the same thing. So it is. Planet Lockdown is a film containing misinformation about COVID-19 that was banned on YouTube and Facebook, who happen to also be part of the Trusted News Initiative. The film producers describe it as a documentary, and then they go
maybe
into
because it is
they just go it presents a
and
wide
you know,
range of falsehoods
you,
and
yeah,
incorrect
yeah, yeah.
statements.
Catherine Austin Fitz,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you wanna say that she's a conspiracy theory, say it. But the lady has been a vice secretary of state in the Bush administration of housing, right? And after she came out because she saw so much corruption and started speaking out against it, they tried to take her down. And she was in courts for years,
really?
For about 10, 12 years, and she won. She won everything. So you want to discredit her? Go ahead, do it.
Okay.
But then go listen to what she's saying and check for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the thing. If people actually go and listen to things themselves without the assumptions, without the frame, like if you're actually able to be a critical thinker mm-hmm. and listen and do research, and I guess we'll come to Israel, but the same sort of thing. Like, how do you actually understand evidence and not just consume media? I mean, like, people that were consuming this same Trusted News Initiative media were believing that October 7th didn't even happen mm-hmm. or that, it was Israel's. It's fascinating because the story is the same thing. There's this simplistic black and white narrative that emerges, and people are confused. And so whereas during COVID there was one group of people that were the anti-vaxxers, now there's another group of people known as the Jews or the Zionists. Yeah. And maybe you could talk about that, because I'm interested at the convergence of all these things and how do we get so confused.
I just want to jump in on a personal story here, because I've been following newspapers for a long, long time. And that's been my source of news, is mainstream media. And always been a bit sceptical of authority. And then COVID came and really had the time and effort to investigate and decided that there's a lot of bad things going on as far as government control of people in so many ways by creep that we don't even notice. And when you were talking about the silos before, I think a relevant one that you've excluded is the military-industrial complex.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of going to bring us to where we're going today, because you've had the Ukraine war mm-hmm. and now we've got the war in Israel. And aside from the emotions on both sides, there is a military complex that is making a lot of money out of both wars.
Yes.
And their business model is to keep it going as long as possible.
Correct.
So for me, I mean, now I look back and, Lee Harvey Oswald probably didn't kill Kennedy, but
probably. The
whole media story for the last 50 years, I now doubt, as a result of what we've seen and what's going on now.
Yeah, that's true. Well, for me, it's the same. And I go back and look at everything that I have believed to be the truth, and I question my beliefs, and I go and validate them again. And most of the time, I find out that there were lies, unfortunately. But I want to come back to your question on, just remind me where you were taking it. So grouping different groups, right? The anti-vaxxers, now it's the Jewish
Zionists,
people or Zionists. Right.
And the Russians. Let's not miss out on the Russians.
But just
how
it divides
people, and then where suddenly the people that you were close with yesterday mm-hmm. are now and you had a shared vision
yes.
and shared understanding of the world, suddenly you have a different understanding, and that of course causes conflicts. And you saw within COVID, you know, there were husbands and wives still in trauma over having different perspectives. And it doesn't seem to matter how much information you bring to the party. One will say you've been fooled, that's misinformation.
So there's that
confusion.
Here's my take on it. Mm-hmm. First of all, it's classic divide and conquer. That's how they work. They will split you over any idea, any ideology, anything. Now it's the Jews or the Zionists, before it was the anti-vaxxers. It doesn't matter. They will come up with the next thing. It's just another tactic to divide and conquer. And it works. And here's something very smart that a person that I really respect said a few days ago, and I hope I will interview him soon, Professor Matthias Desmet. He's a psychologist, a clinical psychologist from Belgium. And he came up with, he was talking during COVID about mass formation and about how groups of people can form really bad opinions about others and go against them and become very violent, etc. And so he was saying a few days ago that when you have groups, so-called groups, that are falling apart because of divide and conquer strategies, tactics, because someone is through the next thing and it managed to divide them, it means that they weren't good groups to begin with, or groups to begin with. They should fall apart and form back together, because in his view, a group that stays together is based on love, is based on values, on real values of humanity, rather than opinions or ideas. If you don't agree with someone, you can still stay friends with them and be with them in the same room or around the same dinner table and respect them and accept them for who they are, just like my parents accepted me during COVID and they were jabbed and I wasn't, and, you know, there was no problem. We still managed to create that family union because we love each other. So it was bigger than that argument. And it's the same now with everything that's happening around the war. You see the freedom movement being split because of people who are pro-Israel, against Israel, or pro-Hamas, or pro-Palestine, against Palestine, pro-Hamas, etc. If people love each other, they can disagree about things, but they can still stay together. And yes.
We're just going to take a short break and listen to a song that is very important
lovely.
At this point.
There's nothing you can do that can't be done. Nothing you can sing that can't be sung. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game. Nothing you can make that can't be made. No one you can save that can't be saved. Nothing you can do, but you can learn how to be you in time. to be.
Love is all you need. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. She loves you, yeah. Okay, and welcome back. And just to bring something positive into all this.
Yeah.
Because we have to remember that hopefully what's happening now is the beginning of a better future.
Mm-hmm. I really hope so, because right now in Israel, it's not easy.
Why are you doing what you're doing? Because obviously you're going against a lot of people. Let's go back to the beginning of COVID. Why did you step out?
I always say I don't go against people. I go for humanity. I want the best for Israelis. And that's why I do what I do. I'm also sick of living in a country where I don't feel safe and I don't feel protected. And it started for me really significantly during COVID when I experienced discrimination in my own country. You know, being raised on the stories of my grandfather, who's a Holocaust survivor, and my grandmother, both telling me about what they had to go through during the 40s in Europe. And seeing very similar symptoms to that in Israel, the land of the Jews, right? The safe haven for Jews. All of a sudden coming to Frischmann Beach in Tel Aviv, if you've ever been there. And there are a couple of big benches normally for tourists. So they have English writing on them. Normally it says, "I love Tel Aviv" on it. And this time it said, "Reserved for vaccinated only."
Whoa.
In English, right? And
why in English? Was that for social media?
Why in English? Because these are like tourist attractions. So the beach in Tel Aviv, you have this big bench. Normally it says, "I love Tel Aviv" in English. Now they replaced it. Not now. It was in 2021. They replaced it with "reserved for vaccinated only." And here I am having a trigger to my grandfather's trauma from when he was 13 back in Belgium, going along the park, seeing a bench where it says "reserved for non-Jews." Like, Jews are not allowed to sit on this bench. And I felt just like like him. And here I am in Israel, where I'm supposed to have, you know, my protected environment, my job, my son, my family, my life. And I'm excluded from society because what? Because I'm a healthy 40-year-old woman who doesn't want to participate in an experimental trial?
No, that sign was based on the safety of the people around you.
Right.
Because you presented a danger.
Right, I did. I was very dangerous back then.
But why did Israel? I mean, we interviewed Professor Shmuel Shapira.
I can tell you why. I have my thesis.
How was it that people came to believe, which mm-hmm. we now know mm-hmm. was a series, you know, it's almost like a domino effect of mm-hmm. one belief then another belief, and it just got bigger and bigger. The lie became bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. And now that we have the, you know, the virtue of hindsight, that we can look back mm-hmm. and see how many deceptions were told to us by our media, by our public health officials. How did Israelis come to believe that? Because you were the first country. So yes. You were the lab rats, so to speak.
We were. They called us that formally. Both the CEO of Pfizer and our prime minister called us the lab of the world. And why? Two reasons. First of all, why were we chosen? Because Israel is a very small country, highly digitized. So our medical records have been digitized for, I think, 20 years now or so. And we have a very good health public health system that keeps all our records digitized. And so Bibi could play on that card and sell us to Pfizer by saying, use us. We will give you the data. We have it all ready, made for you. It's very easy to use that. So and they loved the idea, and he managed to also pay the highest price, and so we were chosen for that reason.
What price was that?
I don't. We paid a lot more for the jabs than other countries did to be first. I don't remember the exact price of each vial. I can get the exact. But we were signed on four different agreements with Pfizer, not just one agreement, four different agreements. Most of them are blacked out still and hidden from the public for 30 years. So we don't know everything that's written in them. And the Supreme Court, the same one that everyone is trying to save for democracy's sake, is the one that actually approved that information to be kept away from the public. Wow. Yes. Highly corrupt. Highly, highly corrupt.
Well, wasn't there one country that did release what was in their Pfizer agreement?
Yes, there was. Yeah. I forget which one it was now. It was recently, isn't it? South Africa now and Brazil, maybe.
Assuming there was different agreements
South
for different
Africa
countries.
Recently, I think.
What do you think was in that agreement? Just looking back at what was, because I thought what was interesting from in Australia was we were allowed to hear about people who were dying or harmed from the AstraZeneca vaccine. Mm-hmm. But so we know from our data that Pfizer, that there were the same things happening, but weren't hearing about
it. I'm sure what you have there is basically Pfizer telling the government that if there are any harms to people, it's the government's responsibility rather than Pfizer. That's clear. But I'm sure there are stuff about the adverse reactions there because they knew that this was not tested on anyone and we were the ones that it's being tested on. So it must be that. There are a lot of people injured in Israel.
But people will say it was tested. There was this extensive testing. In fact, they believe it was the most tested drug of all time, you will hear from some people. And then there was that.
But it wasn't.
And the Brooke Jackson court case has shown that the Department of Defense have allowed Pfizer to go through with a very poorly tested product. And not only that, now there's further evidence that the very product that they tested is different to the product that was released around the world. Mm-hmm. So that's really version one and version two.
Were the doctors in Israel convinced by the government that it was a safe and effective product?
And they didn't bother checking, of course. Same as here. I want to, though, break one detail that people normally have about Israel. Everyone thinks that everyone in Israel is vaccinated or took the jab. It's wrong. It's not right. In the beginning, 6.7 million people took the first jab and 6.1 took the second jab.
Wow.
But when you get to the fourth...
10% dropout.
Yeah, but that's not a big deal. It's still a lot of people, 6.1. We have 9 million people in Israel. But then when you get to the fourth... dose, 850,000.
So that's it.
Yes. And the Omicron, the fifth one, is 400,000. So people stopped taking the jabs after dose two, and then from dose two to three, it was from 6 million to 4.5 million. So with every dose, the level of trust came down.
Did you have to have three jabs to keep your job? Was that going
most
over there?
People, yes, of course. Okay. Most people, yes. I think it was two or three. Most people did. I didn't. I mean, I didn't take it. But many people got fired. Yeah. I was a troublemaker. And maybe people got fired and were, you know, same as here. No jab, no job. So that's one thing I wanted to break it, because people think we were the country that everyone's vaccinated. First of all, not everyone got vaccinated, and also after two jabs, most people stopped. So they know it's a lie.
So that was a marketing campaign.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of people, especially Jewish people around the world, you hear that it's happening in Israel. You assume that it's trusted. You assume that they're following and tracking deaths and harms from the vaccine. And I think the most shocking thing that I heard in terms of Israel was when Shmuel Shapiro, the professor who was in charge of the vaccination program through the Israel Institute of Biological Research, told us that there was no tracking for the first year.
Correct.
There was no data coming out of Israel.
That's true.
And given what you said before, that they're the most digitized, medically digitized.
That's how they sold it to Pfizer. But
why did they not track? And then what happened when they did start to track?
Well, they may have tracked and they're hiding it from us, right? We don't know. We don't have the data. I am pretty sure that they do have the data. I'm sure that they are giving it to Pfizer. I don't buy it that they didn't track. I think they tracked everything. I think they have everything. And some of it is coming out now. It's late. And also people, you know, are so distracted and they don't care about it anymore. So it's not getting any headlines, but it's happening. It's coming out. And they do have a lot of data. The other thing is, you heard, if you've been following, you've heard our prime minister saying a year ago in an interview he gave to Jordan Peterson that he's now preparing the biggest genetic database in the world from Israel. And this is, again, going to be another experimental period where we're selling genetic data of Israelis to I don't know whom around the world. It ties in very beautifully with the next agenda of, you know, transhumanism and eugenics and wanting to do a lot of genetical modifications to the human. And so I wonder what they're doing. But it's running. There are official programs of the government that are running on genetic treatments, different types of genetic treatments, and they're creating this database. It's created already. It's called PSIFAS. I forget how to say it.
Could that be positive for people with illness? Like, what's the potential?
Yuval
Harari. I'm also interested in Yuval Harari and all this because...
You want everyone to hate me after this.
No. But I was interested in how Yuval Harari was... You know, very after the October 7th, he spoke in defense, didn't he?
Of
Israel. Like he
of course. He also took part of the big demonstrations against the government in the past 6 months. He's a leftist and, you know, he's a WEF puppet. But, you know, this guy is very, very sneaky. He's very smart in what he's doing. He pretends to be to warn us from what's coming, but really he's like paving the way to what's coming, normalizing ideas. This is my opinion about him.
I have mixed feelings about him because I feel like he almost tells things in a narrative with a distance from it. Like it's like he's saying things, but not actually. In a way, like he's doing it. He's just predicting it. And then he could, I just find
for,
him to
for
be
those
a,
people
a
who have faith in God or in Judaism and you listen to Yuval Noah Harari, try to find the spirituality in this guy, although he's meditating all day. This guy thinks that there is no God, there is no soul anymore. People are just data collective organisms. And we're here to basically improve the genetic formation of what it is to be human. Now with data and with technology, we can do that, says Yuval Noah Harari. And this is what we're good for. We're good to be monitored by sensors, whether they're outside of your skin or inside of your skin. Your soul and God don't matter anymore. It's nonsense, he says. Right? You go and follow his talks and read his books. I have read his books. But he has no value for spirituality, you know, God, he just sees life as a very superficial, earthy kind of manifestation.
Which was why the interview that he had about October 7th was so interesting, because it was the first time he was passionately distressed about what was happening and You could just feel that, like,
and I believe he is distressed. Yeah. And let me tell you one thing about him. And on my YouTube, you can find the speech he gave during one of the demonstrations against the government about 4 or 5 months ago. He's speaking for like 10 minutes, very passionately about the need to resist dictatorship, and that Benjamin Netanyahu is taking us down a very bad path of dictatorship, and we have to resist him, right? And the funny thing is that whenever you see Yuval Noah Harari speaking in Israel, mostly in Hebrew, he will talk only about left versus right, about how the right-wing government is dangerous. And I'm not for right or left. Yeah. I don't care, right? I'm just portraying the picture for you. So he'll talk about he'll talk about left versus right. He'll talk about how dangerous the right is, and Benjamin Netanyahu specifically, and how we have to take him down because he's a dictator. But when he talks outside of Israel, he will talk about everything but that. He will talk about global agendas. He will talk about transhumanism. He will talk about health and digitalization. And in Israel, he would never mention those topics. Wow. Israelis have no clue that this is what the guy is doing around the world, what kind of topics he's talking about. So Israelis are completely uninformed about the real Yuval Noah Harari and what he advocates, right? They don't know. They think he's all about, he's this big historian that some global organizations have selected to represent the academics, the smart people around the world. He happens to be Jewish and Israeli, so we're really proud of him because he's one of us, but they don't look at what he says, the substance of what he says. Which is really annoying to me.
I think people are generally confused about whether people are on left. You know, some people will say Elon Musk is anti-Semitic. Some people say he's pro-Semitic. Everyone's fighting about. Yeah. They don't even know where people stand, and that's what media does. You know, like
it confuses everyone.
They can confuse
and divide.
They can take a tweet and they can turn the tweet into a different meaning, and you know. We're just watching this happen all the time.
But again, what I'm saying is also not the truth. It's my opinion, and I've formed it based on materials that I have read and looked at, and I've read his book. So I have my own opinion, and I encourage everyone to go and get theirs before they hate me for what I'm saying.
So what should we love you for rather than hate you? So tell us, because you're bringing up a lot of things, and the COVID wasn't tracked in Israel, that the harms from the vaccine were not tracked, to me is I understand why Professor Shmuel Shapiro wrote the book the COVID pandemic, the pandemic circus, which has not been translated to English yet, I believe. But he wanted it to be. If anyone wants to translate a book, it's I think still up for translation. What's your feeling? Like, you're obviously choosing to live there. You've got an Australian passport. You could live here.
Yes, I could live here. I could live many other places around the world. I choose to live in Israel because I love the country and because that's where my family is and because that's where my grandparents came after the Holocaust. I do believe that there is a place for Israelis in Israel, but I think that we need to look at the history that we're not being told about Israel, and we need to look at how we behave to other countries around us and how we think that everything is a God-given gift for us because we are Jewish. We have to be good people, and I don't think that many people in Israel are good people, and I'm calling them out.
What do you mean by that? Sorry.
There is a lot of corruption. There, people are yelling, "Let's save democracy," with the same corrupt politicians that are making this country of ours not a democracy, for example, right?
They're calling
to save the judicial system when a lot of those judges are highly corrupt and are appointing their relatives, right, for example, or taking gifts from other politicians in order to follow their narrative. And I think the Israelis don't want to see it. They just want to play the right versus left game. And the leftists that have been on the street for the past 4, 5, 6 months in Israel before the war started calling for the resignation of Benjamin Netanyahu and the right-wing government have a good intention where they do want a democracy and they do want to live in a good place, but they don't get that it's all the same, that the left-wing politicians are not better than the right-wing ones, and we don't need to look at left versus right. We need to look at morals and values and ethics and call people to account if they are not representing our best interest, the sovereign citizen best interest, but rather the interest of some corporation or their own party or themselves or the money that guides them. And so I'm saying Israelis have to be smarter than that, looking at what's good for the people rather than what's good for the left or the right.
I don't think it's just Israel. I'm sure it's a worldwide phenomenon.
We're in the Jewish radio, so I'm talking specifically about Israel.
You've got two major parties, one left and one right. They've both been corporatized, and smaller parties are very often the system itself will keep them out.
Yes.
And there's really nowhere to go, and the government is not working for the people.
We have government.
That's their basic tenet.
Government corporate media alignment means that we are being told a certain narrative. So what is it that an Israeli, like, so you're saying something. I imagine that left-wing Israelis believe something else because of the media. Like, when you're saying there's all this corruption,
yes,
where would they know that from, or don't they know that?
Just from independent journalism.
Or do they know it and don't care because they're so used to it?
Just independent journalism. Not in the mainstream.
They will not find it. They will have to work very hard to put the pieces of the puzzle together from the mainstream media. They would normally not find it there because the media is bought and controlled. And there have been some testimonies from journalists in the mainstream media a few months ago. I think it was about 5 or 6 months ago, coming out saying that they have received money from the government to shut up about COVID during COVID, but it was kept quiet. And then the war came, and again, no one cares. So people need to be alert and care enough and pay attention. But in Israel, I'm sure you've been and you know, it's just so hard to keep your head afloat, to keep your head above the noise. It's stressful. There is always the next emergency. We live in a constant state of emergency in Israel. If it's not war or terrorist attacks, it's health or it's, whatever. It's left versus right. There's always stuff. So it's very, very hard.
And that's happening globally now. In sleepy Australia, during COVID, people had to worry more than they normally would. Normally they just worry about their football team and, the weather. Mm-hmm. And suddenly there's floods and fire and COVID and disease. And
yes.
There's so much to worry about now globally.
That's right.
And as an individual, I think people just want to survive. And I know so many people just look at me and say, I can't think about this. It's mm-hmm. too much.
I agree.
I just have to make sure that, my child is healthy and we're dealing
with food, shelter, school.
There's just Maslow's hierarchy of needs is on the base.
I'm with you. Yeah. That's why when
safety
I do what I do, I normally talk to people who have no clue about all the stuff that we talk about or that we know, all the global agendas. I talk to them about money because I feel like if I can only explain to them what's coming down the pike with money, then I can help them protect their wealth and their savings. And that really helps them. So understanding what CBDC is and cashless society and all
Central bank
helps
currency.
Them.
Following the money is also a good way to try and work your way through all the things that happen that you don't understand.
Correct.
I know that you want to have a final message. Just one quickie question on a positive note.
Yes.
Talking about all these divisions in society.
Yes.
Since the tragedies happened, how has Israel come together as a society? Or have they?
That's very hard to answer because my heart aches when I come to answer that question. It would be my biggest wish that I could just answer you now with unity. Everyone's united in light of what happened, but it's wrong. It's not true. There are billboards out there, just like you saw during the COVID vaccinations era, saying, "Together we will win." Beyachad nenatzeach. Okay, billboards all over the country. Together we will win, because the new campaign is to direct everyone for war. Everyone needs to want war right now. That's what the mainstream, or that's what the government wants us to want. So they're calling everyone to unite under war, which is almost impossible, because not everyone in Israel wants war. I'm sorry. A mother that is sending her son to Gaza right now, and I have many friends who lost their kids now, during the last 3 months. It's devastating. They don't want war. They want their kids safe. So it's very hard for me to answer you, everyone's united under this, because they're not, but obviously everyone wants to feel protected. And it's very hard because a lot of the truth is not being revealed to us, it's not being said to us, and the same people that got us to where we are still in power. The generals and the prime minister and the ministers and everyone that are holding, that are navigating this big ship that almost sunk on the 7th of October, are still in power. They are still doing what they're doing. So the people, I'm afraid, are still divided. Many of them are calling for war, but many of them are sick of this cycle of bloodshed and violence, and they want to see something different happening. If there is one thing that almost everyone is united around, not everyone, but a lot of people, is the hostages. Everyone wants the hostages to come back. We still have 130 or more or so hostages in Gaza. 110 of them came back. About 20 of them were murdered in hostage. But 130 of them are still there. And it doesn't look like there is a successful deal in sight to bring them back. And everyone's very worried about that. And there, it takes a lot of the headlines. And I think it's also being used to manipulate people's emotional state in Israel. They are behaving sometimes as if it's a reality TV show. And they're dripping down the news about the hostages every night, prime time, 8 p.m. There'll be another release of another hostage. It's surreal. It's really bad the way they're doing it. Mainstream media is playing an important role on this, and people are on the verge of a mental breakdown or
because
stress.
Because they've been in the stress state for so long now.
Yes.
And there's no end.
And we tell them, just plug yourself out of the TV and the radio. Don't listen to the mainstream media anymore.
Yeah.
If you want to know something, go and check it rather than being plugged all day. Yeah. It's even worse now. They're plugged all day. They're obviously suffering from severe mental state.
So could you... There's so much there.
You know, I want to say more positive stuff, this is the reality.
Here we're starting to recover from COVID, but you've gone from COVID to war.
Exactly.
The financial... You were mentioning before... what people could do in terms of the financial collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Where would they go? I know you've got here Efrat Fenixson. You've got a Substack, so just so people can find you and start following you, whether it's on Twitter, substack.com.
It's efrat.substack.com.
Efrat.substack.com. Mm-hmm. That's it. Oh, yeah. Very good. Mm-hmm. And then there's a podcast called You're the Voice, which you can find on
You can find
Spotify,
it on Substack, yeah.
And also
Twitter.
You're on Twitter.
Telegram.
And there's podcasts. She's everywhere.
There's everything. Well, I was a marketeer for 20 years. Yeah. I operate
Linktree,
the whole thing.
Linktree has all the links together, linktr.ee, Fenixson, Fenixson. We might be doing something on the weekend, but I don't know.